They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Crossover Podcast. Glad you could join me this week because it's one of those weeks where there is actual basketball news. You've got talk about the NBA reopening training facilities, some changes in Chicago. Nobody seems to care about Vince Carter, which I want to get into a little bit on this podcast. Joining me to talk about that, taking a break from his time as one of the beach bros down Huntington Beach, Rohan Dadkarni, SI staff writer. What's up, Rohan? Welcome back.
Thank you so much, Chris. You know, I think I earned it, frankly. I've been working on my beach body for a couple years now. This was a good chance to dry run, test it out. No, obviously I haven't been going to the beach, but I'm glad you're staying up on current events. If you're in California and listening to this, don't go to the beach. Let's start there.
Would you tell your friends out there to stop? We're trying to get through this here. None of us like staying at home. None of us like the current circumstances. It doesn't help when in one of the worst states with the coronavirus in the country, you've got these goobers going to the beach on a regular basis.
It terrifies me. Listen, you're speaking to the choir here, preaching to the choir, I should say. You know, my parents live in Florida. There's people going to the beach there, too. I'm terrified of this. I'm with you. Everyone stay home. I don't think I have any friends going to the beach, thankfully enough, even though I know you'd love to call me out on that. But yes, I agree. Please do not go to the beach. All you have to do is stay inside. I understand it's a lot harder for some people than it might be for people like me and you, but just stay inside, please.
Yeah, I feel like we've gone completely full circle here, where we started this whole pandemic out mocking the Corona bro down in Florida, who said, if I get Rona, I get Rona. And now here we are months later after we got through the lion's share of it, still doing dumb shit. But that's a conversation for another day. As always, subscribe to the podcast, iTunes, anywhere you can download podcasts. It's much appreciated. Post a comment. Leave a rating. Simple, easy, free. Best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. All right, Rohan, let's talk a little bit about some of the news that we've had come across our way this week. And that's the idea of the NBA reopening their training facilities to players in some of the states that have relaxed their stay-at-home rules, that being places like Georgia and Oklahoma and soon to be several others. There's cases to be made on both sides about the good and bad about NBA opening its facilities. Let me get yours first. What will you make of this news that the NBA in the next week or so is going to open up its practice facilities to certain players?
It's pretty weird. I've got to be honest. I didn't fully understand the reasoning behind it. Why do this now if you're still not sure when the season is going to start? And I hate to be that guy, but there's a common thread between the states that are opening. If you're paying attention to the news at all, you can kind of figure out why the states that are opening up are opening up. And it doesn't necessarily have to do with, you know, their numbers with the virus or the virus not being as present in those states. And to me, the NBA, which has kind of fashioned itself as a sports league that's, you know, we're on the forefront of everything that's going on with the coronavirus, and Adam Silver saying, hey, we're going to listen to the scientists on this. Do you really think they're listening to the science and the doctors by letting players work out in these states that are open up? I don't think it really, you know, vibes with what the NBA has done so far regarding the coronavirus. So that was kind of my initial thought, which is it worth putting anyone at extra risk for a season that we're not even sure is going to take place? I think that was my first reaction.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of my first reaction. But the more people I talked to, the more definitely changed my opinion on all this. I mean, look, it'd be nice if the NBA could control the country, and how it operated would be how the country operates. But states are independent. They're going to do what they're going to do. And the argument that was made to me by people at the highest level in the NBA offices was, look, if you're in Georgia or Oklahoma and your states are open and gyms are open, players are going to find their way there. Like, these guys have been cooped up like the rest of us for the better part of the last 2 months. You know, they're anxious to get out and start working out some way, somehow. And, you know, even when they go down to outdoor courts, they're seeing rims being taken down so people don't work out. If there are gyms like an Equinox or a 24-Hour Fitness that are open, you're going to see players, you know, trend towards there and go there. So the argument for opening up these facilities is a player safety argument to a degree. It's you open these facilities up and you have guys working out in a sanitized, controlled environment and not in some kind of free-for-all in some sort of public gym. So I understand that. My issue with all this is, how does it affect the postseason? And I continue to harp on this. The idea that, you know, if you open a gym in Oklahoma and you've got members of the Oklahoma City Thunder at their training facility working out, even if it's just individually, for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, before, say, the Clippers or the Lakers are able to work out, that's an unfair competitive advantage. And that's not something the NBA has ever really had. Even in off-seasons, look, off-seasons, guys weren't required to go to a facility, but they did go there when they wanted to. So you had the option always of doing whatever you want to work out. This doesn't give these players that option. There are players in LA and in other states that simply can't work out because they're not allowed to by their state government. So if you've got one subset of players that are working out and training at a facility and another that isn't, doesn't that just create this environment that is just an unfair competitive advantage? And doesn't that by extension make the championship not credible? I mean, that's my biggest issue. Like, if you do this, I think it ruins the credibility and the legitimacy of a championship, which was already going to be viewed with something of an asterisk anyway, given that we're projecting it to be a lot more abbreviated than a regular championship. What do you think?
It's interesting. I think it depends. You know, the way I've always approached this is they need to find a new trophy to give out this year anyway, because it's not going to be normal no matter what you do. And I guess I've kind of just accepted that there's nothing that the NBA can do to create any kind of normal championship or normal circumstances to finish this season, just considering everything that's going on. I don't know if I would go so far as to say it wouldn't be a credible champion, as much as I would say, you know, it might create an unfair advantage, but how do you stop those guys anyways? Because if those states are open and those players are going to be working out, one way or another, they're going to gain some level of advantage, right? And wouldn't you rather have those players doing it at the facility, like you said, just from a health standpoint, as opposed to, you know, mingling with a larger, you know, percent of the population? So I don't know if I would go so far to say it wouldn't create a credible champion. I think in that sense, you have to open up this conversation to maybe a bigger one anyway and say, can we even have anything approaching a normal champion this year? Does it make sense to give out the Larry O'Brien trophy to a team that wins whatever the NBA is going to call the playoffs? Is there a way to just look at this through a whole new lens? Because the logistics of it, to me, are frankly, I don't know how anyone figures it out. I think the NBA is obviously trying very hard. But if we just use the argument that you talked about player safety, player health, making sure that if they are going to be working out anyway, they're working out in a safe environment, how do you stop them from doing that? Do you think the solution is close all gyms? Because wouldn't that then incentivize players to go work out at the Equinox, at the LA Fitness, like you mentioned?
Yeah, look, I'm with you on the idea that there should be some sort of separate trophy for this year. I mean, come back if you want to come back. There are plenty of financial reasons to come back. I mean, you want to get, you know, games on a broadcast. You want to satisfy your obligations to ESPN and TNT and certainly your regional affiliates, which are going to become problematic as well. But don't call it the Larry O'Brien Championship. I mean, I've been watching this the Bulls documentary, The Last Dance, and playoffs and championships are won, you know, through fire. Like you go through just wars to win championships. Even without this current set of events, like you're going to have like best of threes and like at best of fives, if that. I mean, it's just going to be such a weird postseason that it's not going to require the same type of energy to win a championship that it would otherwise. And imagine this. Imagine if LeBron and the Lakers win a championship. Like, it will become another, like, it will be scrutinized for all eternity. Like, if LeBron wins a fourth championship here, and people say, well, LeBron won four championships and Jordan won six, the immediate counter-argument, well, he won a championship in that year that didn't really right, count, and right. he won in the abbreviated year. It's just like, just look, it's tough because it potentially could be LeBron's last best chance to win a championship, given what the landscape might look like next year, but this is a unique circumstance. I mean, I say just screw it, and you know, call it the David Stern trophy. Like, just make a new trophy for this year and go through the motions to have a televised event, but not one that ends with a recognized champion.
Yeah, I agree with you completely there. And just to maybe kind of put a bow on it, I agree that those players who are going to work out are going to get a competitive advantage. I just don't think that there is another solution that's better than if states are open and guys are going to work out no matter what, make sure they're doing it in the safest environment possible. And you kind of have to live with that competitive advantage, because I think we both agree the best solution is not, you know, worrying about competitive advantages and who gets to work out and who doesn't get to work out. It's to accept that these aren't normal circumstances and create a whole new framework for whatever postseason event the NBA wants to put on.
You know, the other side of it, Rowan, is that, you know, there are teams out there that are wondering, are they coming back at all? And if they are, why are they? Steve Kerr, the coach of the Warriors, was on a conference call with reporters this week, and he said that Golden State was in off-season mode and that they were effectively operating like their season was over. And look, I agree with Steve Kerr. Like, the Warriors' season should be over. The Cavaliers' season should be over. These sub-500 playoff teams, yeah, or non-playoff teams, they shouldn't be thinking about coming back. I mean, there's really no sense to me in having like a 3-week training camp in Cleveland to have the Cavaliers come back for 5 meaningless regular season games. I understand there's a consequence to that. You're not really giving like the Portlands and the New Orleans and the Sacramentos, you know, a chance to compete for that last playoff spot in the West. I get that. You'll have some other teams that would be jockeying for seeding. That could be problematic as well, but I just don't see the point in having almost half the league come back for games that don't matter. It just, I think if you're going to move forward, you start by telling these non-playoff teams you're done. The only teams that should be even thinking about getting back into the flow are the teams that are in the playoffs. And even that might be a stretch, but I'm all for Steve Kerr's philosophy on this. Like, it should be end game for these non-playoff teams.
I agree completely. There's no point. You're just putting more people at risk. I think really what it's going to come down to is money. If you're Cleveland, I mean, your only incentive to come back is, can we somehow get 2 more home games out of this? I don't know. I don't think fans are going to be there, so I don't even know what that would mean for Cleveland. It's just going to come down to revenue sharing. Is a team like the Lakers going to be okay with sharing whatever money's come in from whatever new format with the teams that weren't in the playoffs? That's really what it comes down to. I think as long as the financial aspect of it is worked out in a way that these, you know, small market teams aren't, quote unquote, you know, offended by being left out, it makes complete sense. Just from a safety standpoint and a logistical standpoint, I'm with you. You know, if some people are saying we're going to need a month to get players ready, and then the Hornets come back and play 4 games, that doesn't make any sense. I just think that those teams are going to have to be satisfied financially to just, you know, be told they're giving up on the season completely. Because Golden State's in a unique position with, you know, the new arena. They probably still made a good amount of money this year. A team like Cleveland or Charlotte, they may feel a little differently about that.
Well, the only reason for these teams to come back is to satisfy those regional outlet obligations, which are not inconsiderable. I mean, you have to deal with that at some point, the money you're bringing in from these local networks. But you know, if it was like 15 games, I'd get it. But it's really not going to be. It's going to be 5, maybe 6 games at best. And that's only if this thing turns a corner very quickly in the next 3 or 4 weeks. So I say just go and completely shut it down. By the way, the Lakers might, you know, well, Lakers are short on cash, as you know. I mean, they're
yeah,
applying
right.
for PPP loans. I would just love, I would say this, Rowan, I know that the Lakers were not the only team in the league to consider this. Like, this was something that went around NBA front offices and was discussed amongst different teams. I would love to know how they came to a consensus that applying for this was a good thing. That the story, by the way, is the Lakers applied for a loan and received a loan under that the Paycheck Protection Program that the government put out primarily to satisfy and help small businesses. The Lakers, by the way, are not a small business. They are a $4.4 billion enterprise as valued by Forbes. and they asked for and received a loan in the amount of $4.6 million. I mean, like, I just want to know, Rohan, who thought that was a good idea. I would love to meet that person who thought that was a good idea.
I could not believe it, and I'm glad that they were, like, rightfully shamed for it. Also, who, like, how many people on the Lakers right now could come up with $4.6 million if the Lakers really needed it? Like, how many people associated with the Lakers organization, or how many people who sit courtside would just give the Lakers $4.6 million right now if they asked for it? I bet you Ice Cube would consider it. He's such a huge Lakers fan. I bet you if the Lakers are like, hey, Cube, we need $4.6 million, he'd be like, sure, here you go. The fact that they applied for it, and that was the sum they received, so many just absurd things about that story. I'm glad that the Lakers were publicly shamed into giving that money back.
It's like LeBron receiving a stimulus check. Like, it's right. It just is completely insane to me. And yeah, they did deserve to get whacked for that, both publicly and by people like Steve Mnuchin, who took him to task publicly as well. All right, let's talk about the Chicago Bulls for a second. Not about the documentary, but the actual Bulls, who are making moves within their front office. Arturis Karnisovas, longtime NBA executive, he gets an opportunity to run his own NBA team, moving on from Denver to Chicago. He makes a GM hire this week, Mark Eversley, who was the former assistant GM in Philadelphia. That's an interesting team to take over, Rohan, because I think that if you're Arturis and you're Eversley and you're that new front office, you got to look at that as a short-term turnaround. I mean, there is good young talent in Chicago right now. There is, you know, whether you think Zach LaVine is a franchise player or not, he's a good young player. You get Lauri Markkanen there, who is a good young player. Wendell Carter is there, who's a good young player. One of the things that Paxson and Gar Forman did well was that they tended to have good drafts. And look, they screwed up everything else when it came to trades and other things, but they drafted pretty well over the years. So that nucleus is good. In like 2 years, I think it's actually next summer, some of those bad contracts are going to come off the books, so there'll be some flexibility there. If you're the Bulls, I mean, I know you got to figure out your coaching situation for sure, but if you're Arturis and you're Mark Eversley, with a couple of tweaks there, you should be in the playoffs, maybe as early as next year. And then if you can get a top free agent in 2021 where there figures to be some guys, you might have a chance to elevate yourself really quickly. What do you think of the situation in Chicago?
I mean, some people were talking about the Bulls as maybe a surprise playoff team or a fringe playoff team as early as this season. I really like Arturis Karnisovas. I mean, I did a story on the Nuggets. It's been a couple years now, but just chatting with him, he's a really smart guy. I mean, obviously, Tim Connelly gets a lot of the credit for what's happened in Denver, and rightfully so. I mean, the Nuggets have built kind of the ideal small market team. I mean, top two, top three team in the West. Did it by drafting a bunch of great guys like Jokic, Gary Harris, Jamal Murray. Then they eventually signed someone like Paul Millsap. I think that's all, you know, replicable in Chicago and perhaps even on a bigger scale. It's not long ago that Chicago, while they might not have a history of getting big free agents, guys are interested in playing there. I mean, Carmelo Anthony was interested in playing there. LeBron and Dwayne Wade were taking meetings there. People like the idea of playing for the Bulls. Like you said, I mean, I think Markkanen is probably still their best prospect. I do like Carter a lot, but it's not inconceivable they could be really good really soon. I really like the Eversley hire too. The idea that they're getting these guys who have worked in front offices that know what it takes to mine the fringes for talent is really important, especially in the Eastern Conference. I think the Bulls have a lot of potential to kind of, you know, exponentially grow over the next few years with Karnisovas as their GM.
Yeah, and I think the big question is going to be what they do with the head coach. And look, I think there's an opportunity there, and I've mentioned this, and I've written it, and I've talked about it, but Kenny Atkinson, to me, makes the most sense. I mean, look, I understand Jim Boylan is the incumbent, and he has been fired, but if you're Arturis, you're a new GM, you're going to bring in your own guy. It just happens all the time in professional basketball. And the obvious choice to replace him is Kenny Atkinson. I mean, Kenny Atkinson took over a Nets team that looks remarkably like this Chicago Bulls team. Good young talent, maybe not an alpha in the mix, but Atkinson took those guys like D'Angelo Russell, who was damaged goods at the time, Spencer Dinwiddie, Joe Harris. There's a whole bunch of guys like that on Chicago. I mean, LaVine is the top guy of them all, but Markkanen, Carter, I mean, even if Chris Dunn comes back, I mean, you've got some guys that can be molded. Atkinson is the best developmental coach maybe in all of basketball, and definitely the best available developmental coach on the market. You want to turn this team around right away and get it in the playoffs next year? You hire Kenny Atkinson. You go out there and you swoop in and you take him away from maybe the Knicks or some other team that might be interested, and you make him your franchise coach, because Atkinson's stock, it's still very high. I mean, Atkinson, look, I thought he got royally screwed in Brooklyn, but most of the league still views Atkinson as a very good coach. So he's going to get a job sooner rather than later. But I look at Kenny Atkinson as being a no-brainer choice in Chicago.
I would love that hire for them. It makes a lot of sense. Ironically, or whatever word you want to use, I do think you have to wonder if the plan is to bring in a star in 2021 or in the future, how would that work with Atkinson? Would he be comfortable with that? Would the quote-unquote star player be comfortable with that? Granted, I think you should want to find the star player who likes the idea of playing for Kenny Atkinson, because I agree with all the things you said about him. He's a great coach. The Nets, no one expected him to be in the position they are. And what the front office and coaching staff did to turn that whole situation around as quickly as they did is really remarkable. So I'm all in on Kenny Atkinson. I think that's a great hire. I hope you're able to speak it into existence. Do you mind if I tell a Jim Boylan story real quick?
Please.
So I was in Oklahoma City working on a feature on Chris Paul, and they were playing the Bulls one night. And I'd never seen an interaction like this between a coach and a referee before. But I'm sitting by the court, and Jim Boylan is upset about a foul call, and he's complaining about it to the ref. And the ref said there's nothing there. And Jim Boylan said, maybe if you'd ran back down the court fast enough, you would have seen it. And the ref gave Jim Boylan a look that I'm not sure I've seen a referee give a coach before in my entire life. That felt a little too personal to me, Chris.
But basically calling the referee out of shape. You think that was a,
yeah, but come on. That's a little over the top. Wouldn't you agree?
I mean, Jim Boylan likes his players to hustle. He's a hard-nosed coach. Maybe he wants the same out of his referees. I don't know. Maybe that's going to be the case. I don't like to advocate for the firing of anybody, but like, if you're the Bulls, you've got a year and a half of Jim Boylan to see on tape. Like, you've got evidence here, and I haven't seen enough. Go ahead.
He's in like open conflict with Zach LaVine at multiple points during the season. It's almost like they want them not to like each other. I don't get it. It's more so that just like, what is he bringing to the team? And it seems like none of the players really seem to get along with him. It just doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, it doesn't. You've got to hire. And look, I don't think that Kenny Atkinson, like, I still, there's like a whole deeper dive to be done on what happened in Brooklyn and why, you know, whether it's Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, or some combination of both didn't want to play for him. I mean, you're never going to get me to believe that Kenny Atkinson walked into Sean Marks' office and said that my voice isn't getting through to these guys. Like, he hadn't coached them. Like, he coached, what, Kyrie for like 20 games. He'd coached Kevin Durant for zero. He coached the combination of Kyrie, Spencer Dinwiddie, and who was it? Was it Harris or somebody else there? Or no, Caris LeVert for like 5 games. Like, having coached, not having anything close to your full roster, you're just not going to convince me that Kenny Atkinson was convinced that it didn't work there. I think there's way too much positivity around Kenny Atkinson right now. And look, the idea of a 2021 free agent is certainly nice, but it's not a reality yet. What the reality is, you've got your young team in Chicago that is there. Like, they're the perfect team for Kenny Atkinson to jump in and take over. All right, let me ask you lastly about Vince Carter. And this is like, I'm a little bit surprised, Rohan, that there's been fairly minimal interest in this being the end to Vince Carter. I say that as someone that, you know, I talked to Vince about a week and a half ago. I wrote a magazine story on him. I published our transcript of our interview on SI.com this week. It just doesn't seem like Vince gets the kind of appreciation that a Kobe or a Dirk get. And I get he's not Kobe and Dirk, but this was an 8-time All-Star who was an MVP candidate for a number of years, who set the NBA record for number of seasons played, who did something that I can probably count on one hand the number of guys that have done what Vince has done in terms of going from alpha superstar into role player who was able to accept that role and be successful at it for a number of years. Why do you think there's been so kind of, you know, a collective shrug out there about the end coming for Vince Carter?
It's a great point. You know, I read your magazine story. It was really good. Not only was Vince Carter all those things you mentioned, he is like one of the biggest fan favorites of that era of basketball from the mid-2000s, early-2000s, his dunks. He was mega popular with a lot of people in my generation. It's crazy. I think the issue is several different things, actually. You know, while it was great that he was a role player and willing to accept that role, the last few years of his career, he also wasn't really playing on teams of consequence. You know, obviously he wanted to play, and I respect him for that. But he was kind of toiling, you know, with the Kings when they weren't doing that much. Now with Atlanta, who is having an even worse season than the year before. So I think part of the issue was he was just playing on teams that didn't matter. And then, you know, kind of bouncing around at the end, it was hard for – you know, if he had gone back to, say, Toronto, let's say, for a final season, or even the Nets, which, you know, might not be the team people remember him for, but just something to give us that kind of nostalgic element, it's kind of hard to appreciate Vince Carter when he's playing for a team that, you know, he doesn't look quite right in the uniform. The team is not very good. You know, he waited until the middle of the season to say it was going to be his last year. So it's just those little things like that that I think have made it maybe harder for people to appreciate Vince than other guys of his ilk in the past. And then obviously right now, you know, there's so many things going on that it's kind of hard to put, you know, his send off into the proper context of everything else that's happening in this country. But I agree with you. Not only did he have such a great career on the court, but whether it was, you know, the Olympic dunk or his dunk contest dunks, I mean, this guy was hugely, hugely popular. Like, people forget, you know, Vince Carter was at any point, you know, during the mid-2000s, you know, pound for pound, the most famous guy in the NBA.
Yeah, and like two big what-ifs I'm going to have about Vince Carter's career. One, if it didn't go south in Toronto, like the end in Toronto was complicated on a couple levels. Like Vince, you know, by his own admission at times, you know, wasn't giving it his all in every single game. You had a coach at that time in Kevin O'Neal who just wasn't equipped to be an NBA head coach, just wasn't the right guy. But like, A full bore Vince, and you have to remember that last full season he had in Toronto, you know, that was a rookie Chris Bosh year. Like Vince Carter correct, and Chris yeah. Bosh were teammates for one full season. Like Chris Bosh with that team eventually turned it around enough to become a consistent playoff team. What might that team have been like if you had the Vince Carter that went on to New Jersey to be an all-star player, continue to be an all-star player? I mean, he was traded. Like that trade from Toronto to New Jersey, like the Raptors got nothing out of it. They got two first round picks, which turned out to be nothing. And they got some spare parts in like Alonzo Mourning, who never played there. Eric Williams. Like you trade a player like Vince Carter, you better get something back. I understand that that's a trade that needed to happen because of the toxicity of the relationship between Vince and that team, specifically the front office. But that's going to be a big what if to me. The other part I never really understood. I get his explanation for it. Like, I don't know what you gain out of playing for Sacramento and Atlanta at the end. I just don't. Like, I don't know. I get that you're playing a little bit more, but it's not like you're playing, you know, 30 minutes a night and you're at least contending for a playoff spot. You're on a bad team that is in the early stages of a rebuild. And look, Vince said to me he had an opportunity to, you know, play with a contender and sit on the bench and be kind of a mentor type guy. It just didn't fit him. I wonder if he'll regret that down the line. Not that there's like huge value in, you know, just being a 15th man on somebody's bench, but it's got to be more value than, you know, like there were times last year that Vince was a broadcaster. Like he was doing Hawks games for like the radio. Right. Like, it's just like, I don't really understand the thinking, especially that like 1 year in Atlanta. Okay. But to go back to that team instead of signing on to be a backbencher with a, you know, with a contender, I don't really get that. I mean, 22 years in the NBA, you can't spend one of them just kind of enjoying yourself. Like, I mean, you know, collecting that.
Wouldn't you rather see him play like 8 minutes a night with the San Antonio Spurs and like Greg Popovich or some team like that, as opposed to like 12 minutes a night with the Hawks? And it's uncomfortable anyway. It's weird. Like, I really respect him for being like, I just want to go where I can play, but it's not like these teams aren't going to use you at all. And like, you're still going to have utility. It was such a weird way for him to end his career. You know, not even, you just at least try to go back to one of the cities that you were so famous in. I mean, I feel like there were a lot of teams that would have used him even a tiny bit. I mean, I could see him, you know, launching up some threes for the Rockets 9 minutes a night, something like that. You know, give yourself another opportunity to have one moment in the playoffs where maybe you come off the bench and hit a big three in the third quarter, something like that. Just something that we can attach to your final years of your career and be like, that moment right there, you know, brought us back to the Vince Carter of our youth, as opposed to who's even watching Hawks games over the last couple months of the season. You know what I mean? It's like they're just irrelevant at this point. And it is really sad to me because I feel like he could have offered so much by playing on a relevant team, even if it wasn't a title contender, but just play for a coach we love or anything like that. And instead going to these teams that are no one's paying attention to them by Christmas, it's a little frustrating.
It's irrelevant now, but like at least do it like Tracy McGrady did. Remember Tracy McGrady signed like in April of 2013 with San Antonio and rolled the bench in the playoffs. Like, yeah, take a buyout before March 1st, then glom on to a contender and see what's out there. I mean, I just it was just weird. Like, it just, I mean, I grew up, like, Vince Carter was such a big part of the fabric of the NBA in the early 2000s and the late 90s and early 2000s. I mean, he was great. Like, people that might be listening to this podcast don't remember how electric he was. I mean, he changed and revitalized the slam dunk contest in 2000. He was an MVP candidate that year. I mean, when things were going good in Toronto, he looked like he was going to be the next Kobe, like be the guy that took over for Michael and ascend to those rankings. So it was just weird to see him kind of toil there at the end with the Atlanta Hawks. I wasn't really feeling that. I mean, to each their own. Like, you know, Vince, and one thing I'll say about Vince, that he was very much at peace with his decision. And, you know, if this was the end, if it ended, you know, in a meaningless regular season game against New York, where he's standing alongside RJ Barrett and taking feeds from Trae Young, I mean, okay, great. Like, he's it's his own career. It's his life. I just would have liked to have seen him get one opportunity to play in a finals and have that story be part of his overall legacy.
Without a doubt. And actually, I just want to add in real quick, I mean, because we're kind of seeing, you know, watching The Last Dance, teams and players don't always get the endings they deserve. And if you have an opportunity to get a special ending, you know, and I think some people, obviously, they might have rolled their eyes a little bit at Dwayne Wade, you know, doing the one last dance, or even Kobe Bryant, you know, shooting 50 times in a game for a 20-win Lakers team or whatever it was. But, you know, these guys have given us, people like me and you, so much in terms of entertainment or the stories they provided or what they do for the fans. Like, you know, those moments are special. And if you're a player and you get a chance to have the ending you deserve, take it, okay? Don't worry about, you know, if anyone's going to roll their eyes, or don't worry about, you know, feeling like it's going to be selfish. Because at the end of the day, people are going to look back on that last year, whatever you did, with fondness. And I think that's important. And, you know, whether it's Vince or whoever it is, like, what if LeBron James, obviously, you know, Vince Carter wasn't LeBron. What if LeBron ended his career, you know, doing something like this? It would be kind of devastating. So I hope every player, you know, kind of gets the ending they deserve. And maybe this is the one Vince wanted, but it just feels like someone who gave so much to the fans and the culture of this league deserved a little bit more.
Oh, you didn't roll your eyes at Dwayne Wade when he said one last dance. You stood and applauded Dwayne Wade when he said that.
If Dwayne Wade
signed a contract with the Lakers when this pandemic ends, you will be the first one to praise it as a brilliant move by Wade and Rob Pelinka.
Okay, first of all, this is what I get for trying to be diplomatic. But if we're going to go there, I didn't merely stand and applaud, Chris. I stood, applauded, and I cried. You make sure you get that in there.
Okay. Cried. Got it. Noted for the record. Roman, gotcha. Stay healthy out there. Stay off the beaches. Tell your Corona bros out there to stay off the beaches as well. And thanks for joining me, my man.
Anytime, Chris. Thank you, man.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.